This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
I think from my perspective, the top things that I think students can do, the first being understanding their own learning profile, right? So I'm a student with a learning difference of some kind or anxiety. What accommodations am I getting in my high school right now? Everyone's getting support in some way, right? Yeah. That's why they have these departments on campuses now. That's why they're growing programs like this for student help. I think about things like that. I think about managing your own finances, you know, things like that. You know, those are things that can start at home in K-12. A lot of the life stuff, laundry and cleaning and organization, right? I mean, I'm a middle schooler, so I'm in it with that right now. But for some students, that's super strange and they get really worried about that. And so helping them with even scripts of like, this is how you would say this, right? And this is, you know, how you, let's practice, let's role play, right? And practice, right. You doing this, but all the things you mentioned, they might pair a student with an upperclassman that they can, you know, bounce ideas off of, you know, famously, I guess, sororities and fraternities do have this, you know, a big brother or a big sister, right? Where you pair, you know, and that's kind of like your peer mentor, and they're going to help you through this process, this transition process. You know, sometimes it might be part of that piece, might be part of a support program on a campus, right?
Hello, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and today we're talking about navigating college support systems with Anne Marie Stripling. And I'm going to have her introduce herself, but she is a great person to have on today. She specializes in college transitions and supporting students specifically with anxiety and learning challenges. So Anne Marie, thank you so much for joining us.
You are welcome very much.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into this space and how you work with adults, young adults, in this transition period and help them with strategizing and next steps.
Absolutely. My name is Anne Marie Stripling. I work for a program called Focus Collegiate. We support students across the nation, college students, generally during their first year, 2 years, to provide some wraparound support for them while they're going to college and help them be successful. I've been working with students with disabilities for a very long time, probably as long as you have, about 20 years now, going on 20 years. I love it because my background is in special ed and counseling. And so I've been on kind of both sides of the IEP table, right? On the side with the parents and then the side with the district. And I just love helping students through this transition period. It's a very exciting time. There's so much potential for them at the next step. It's also can be a very stressful time for parents and for students. And so it's really my passion. And, you know, I'm excited to continue to be able to do the work.
Well, I'm looking forward to what we're going to discuss today. And as I mentioned, right, so navigating college support systems, it's mm-hmm. a huge deal. I think if we could just kind of set the stage, we've done discussions before of what can parents do to kind of help prep. But I think just after launching my first baby to college, it's nerve-wracking and parents want to know what should we be doing while they're in high school or even before that to kind of prep them and get them set up for success, regardless if there is a challenge that is happening within their learning system. And so we know that structured transitions really help students with learning differences. So what are some kind of preparatory steps that you can recommend for high school students that are experiencing some learning and anxiety needs that they should take before even stepping out into the college realm?
Great question. I think from my perspective, the top things that I think students can do, the first being understanding their own learning profile, right? So I'm a student with a learning difference of some kind or anxiety. What accommodations am I getting in my high school right now? What type of scaffolding is being put in place in my high school for me to complete a paper, for example? Or, you know, am I getting extended time on my tests, right? So thinking about the accommodations that they're currently receiving, understanding why they receive those accommodations, why it's important in their lives, but also thinking about what type of support they might be getting that's not at the school, that's at home, right? So for example, man, my mom reminds me 15 times a day that I've got to get my backpack ready, right? Okay, that's an additional support. And so, and that contributes to really understanding who you are as a learner and what type of support you might need going forward in college. So that's one. The other one is practicing life skills, living skills. Hey, you're at home. Are you getting yourself up in the morning? How do you do that? Or is mom knocking on the door? What about taking your medication? Do you take it on your own? Does mom remind you? You know, I talk to parents all the time about creating systems for their students and with their students in high school that they can carry over to college, right? So you're set up for success. Then you're ready to go because you already know how to do that because you've already been doing that in the home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And if I could just interject right here, I'm glad that we're setting this stage. And I love that you're saying for me, right? So having the student really understanding if they have an IEP, if they have a 504, although that looks very different in college, and that's a whole other podcast that we've done. But in terms of just understanding that impact and what is working and what is not working, and having the kiddo, the young adult, the student identify that and prioritize that so that when they get to college, they're going to then be better advocates for themselves. And I think that's, and I love also about what supports are taking place at home, because there's so many hidden labor supports that us as parents kind of put in place, but we've been doing it so long that we may not even recognize that we're doing that. And so taking a pause and really kind of doing inventory of what structures are in place at home. And I would also say the community, right? So if you're in something in the community, whether it's a job or a play or whatever it may be, but like what is happening there? So really having an honest conversation with your kiddo and help them kind of filter through of what's working, what's not in all of these realms, because as you kind of just mentioned, in terms of those life skills, we're going to need those in college. Yes. And if we're not thinking about home and community as well as school, we really need to make sure that that conversation and process is starting to be put in place.
Yes, 100%. And frankly, they're going to need to articulate those things to a disability support counselor in order to become eligible for their accommodations. And so if they're prepared, right, and they know all that information, then going into those meetings, it's a no-brainer. I already know what my accommodations are. I know why I need them. I know what might work best for me. Or maybe it's something that worked in high school that I might not get at college, but here's what I think a good workaround would be, right? And then the disability support folks on campus know, wow, okay, you know, this young adult's got it going on. They know what they need and why.
Yeah, we're eliminating that guesswork.
Yes.
All right. So we talked about understanding yourself and then life skills, but what was that other one? I think you had a third one.
The other one is going away from home, Wendy. Oh my, right? With COVID, and we've all come out of COVID, and you know, there are a lot of students that missed going to the overnight camp or going to travel abroad or whatever it is. And I think that for students to be able to spend time away from their families at a different place. Maybe it is a week long, 3 week, month long camp. Maybe it's going with some friends on a spring break trip, right? On their own. These are really important experiences for students in that they get to practice being away from mom and dad. And I tell this all the time to parents. Parents also get to practice.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I sent my student to an overnight camp and I cried the entire way home and was freaking out. But so for me, it was also, you know, a way for me to practice. What does that feel like that they're not with me, right? That I don't know what's happening every second of the day.
So it's a strange feeling.
Yeah, it is a strange feeling. It's super scary. And so for parents to be able to practice that and students to be able to practice that ahead of the college transition is so important. So important.
So if we have kiddos that understand what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes disability services are underutilized.
Yes.
So how can we as parents and professionals help our kiddo kind of not feel stigmatized if they do feel stigmatized in terms of that process of accessing and having conversations with adults about things that we need.
One of the things that I feel good about with respect to colleges right now is colleges are offering more and more things for every student. Tutoring, writing center, student success department, all of these things, right? And so there's less stigma, I think, in general about getting extra support as a college student. But as it relates to our students with disabilities, right, it's helping parents and students understand what colleges do and don't do, okay? So for students going to college, college is about access, not success. And K-12 is about success, right? So it's thinking about that. It's also feeling, from a student looking at a college they might select, really understanding what that office can do for them and feeling comfortable and confident in that, even the actual space. And so when I talk with students about, hey, you know, what college are you going to select? They often will go visit the disability support offices on the campuses before they actually make their college choices to see, do I like these people? Do I feel confident walking through the doors? Are people smiling, right? You know, do I feel like this is a place where if I need to come into this testing center, am I cool with that? Do I feel okay with that, right? So it even up, you know, up to the point that they go to college, it's really can be part of that selection process, right? Is thinking about that. You know, we talked a little bit about the learning profile, and I think, you know, for students to understand what they need and why is really important in that process. And probably more than anything else, I think it's helping students understand that every college student has never been to college before, right? So if I've never done something, if I've never done something, what would make me think that I'm going to be perfect at it and need no support whatsoever? Nothing. You've got to have support. And so being open to that experience and knowing that even though as a student, you may feel like I'm the only one, right? Like you're the only one. You're not even close to the only one. Everyone's getting support in some way, right?
Yeah.
That's why they have these departments on campuses now. That's why they're growing programs like this for student help.
I love that you brought up the smiling part, because when we took our oldest son, he's now sophomore in college visits, we first went to just schools that we just went for size, right? So
okay.
Urban setting, a large setting, small setting, just we're in an area that we're pretty close to and have easy access to different setting type schools. So he kind of got a feel, a vibe of what he was looking for. But I love that you brought up the smiles, because that's exactly what I said to him. I was like, look around when we start touring these places and see if the kiddos are smiling, students, right? Because I said, that's going to tell you. And we actually took a tour. He ended up not going to this particular school, but it was pouring rain, but people were walking around smiling. And I was like, if they can smile in the rain, like this is a good vibe, right? So I think that's a good measure. And then let me ask you, you brought up taking a tour of the disability office. Can we talk about that for a little bit? I think that's important for folks to know, like that's even an option. And then also like what questions should that student ask, or parent, but I like students at this age to start being able to ask questions. Like, are there anything in particular that stands out, kind of like that smile moment that you can then feel like, okay, this is a place that's going to support me as a young learner and my parent, you know, feels like I'm getting supported.
Yeah, every college is different, right? And how they deal with all of these things. But in a lot of cases, you know, the student, the parent can call saying, hey, I'm coming to the campus. I'm doing a tour. I would love to see where your office is located. I don't know if you would be willing to meet with me. And some will and some won't, especially before the student has committed to that college, right? And so even if they say, yes, we would love for you to come see our office, you know, pop by and here's where we are, they may not talk to you directly about that particular student at that particular time, because that student hasn't accepted and they're not a student at that college, right? So they're going to talk in more generalities, but that's okay. Students can still get a feeling of, you know, are there students coming in and out of this building and everybody feels good about it, right? I think one of the really important questions to ask is how many disability support specialists are serving your campus, right? Yeah. Is it one person that's doing everything? Is it five? Right. So thinking about, you know, what might this look like for me in real time if I were to come here? And if there's one person versus five or 10 or whatever it is, it's really going to help the student understand how accessible these folks might be if I have a problem or if something happens, or maybe if I have a professor who's not, you know, who's not on board with implementing this accommodation and I need help, right, from somebody in that office. You know, those would be good things to think about and ask. Sometimes students want to know things like, okay, if I have extended time on my test, where does that happen? Right? What do I do that here in this office? Is there a testing center? Do I go to the professor's office? Right? So asking those types of questions, logistic questions, I find help students, especially with anxiety, because then they can kind of preview and they know what to expect, right? What is this going to be like for me if I were to go here? And again, you know, they're not going to say, well, sure, you get extra time because you're not a current student there, but they might say students who do get extra time typically test here, right? So I think those are some important pieces.
In your kind of professional journey with this and guiding families and students, have you kind of, is there like the sweet spot or magic number? Because you were talking about like the, and I'm sure it's super individualized as well. So this may be a really way off question, but if you're looking at a campus of like 6,000 students, does it have like X amount of support that goes along with it? Or is there kind of like, you look at campuses and say, okay, that looks like they have kind of a really good infrastructure for you to go there? Or is there, you know, is there some kind of guidance on that?
Well, I think there are several things that go into that question. One is, right, where's the student coming from and where they're going to? If they're coming from a school of, you know, 500 students and they're going to a school of 30,000 students, that might be a mismatch, right? Like right out of the gate. Totally unrelated to disability support services. Every office is kind of different in how they, you know, how much support they need. I think knowing, you know, at a school of 6,000, for example, figuring out, okay, but how many students, you know, typically identify, right, with your office? And can you guys meet that need, right, in a way that feels good to you as a college, right? So those are important things to know too. Because, you know, every college is different in how many students identify and how many students are actually getting accommodations through that office, no matter the size.
Yeah. And I think it's really good just to go in and ask these questions. Because again, like you can get a sense of what someone is saying with just kind of how they're saying it versus and looking around. I think that was excellent of people coming in and out. And that was a really hard question to like nail down. But it's just kind of thinking ahead. And then kind of to switch a little bit in terms of executive function, kind of what systems do you recommend to help build capacity for our students when they're kind of trying to juggle those academics and then they have social life and they have self-care and it is their first year and it's just a lot?
I'm just here to tell you, your phone is your friend. Your parent thinks it's not because they're tired of you scrolling on TikTok on your phone. But your phone is such a great tool as a student for you to use, right? Because we know they're never going to forget their phone. Most students, even if it's a student with executive functioning challenges, they're likely always remembering the phone, right? On your phone, I mean, using your calendar on your phone, getting access to your learning management system at your college on your phone, right? Figuring out ways to set wake up reminders, alarms, medication reminders on your phone, right? I mean, I think, and especially now, like being able to pull down pretty much any app you could ever want related to executive functioning, you can do it, right? I mean, I use AnyList every single day of my life, right? So, and everybody uses different tools, but I think the phone allows students to have what they need there. I also think that, you know, for some students, it's hard. They get distracted on the phone. It's really, really hard for them to manage that responsibly. And so there's, you know, part of this is allowing students the time and space to really understand what that means for them. And so sometimes we'll talk to students about, hey, like, we know you want to scroll TikTok, but you also want to go to the gym. How about TikTok while you're at the gym? On the treadmill. Great. Let's do those things together, right? Something that you want to do, something that you need to do for your own health and wellness. So I think, you know, tech is here. It's not going anywhere. Let's try to use it to the best of our ability as young adults.
So pulling that idea in of tech, and we know like the social aspect of college can be a lot for mm-hmm. students with anxiety.
Yes.
What are some strategies for helping our students build those connections while still managing anxiety?
Students have so much potential when they go into college. You know, a lot of the students that we see, they've been doing things to kind of for their resume, for their college application process. And those things may or may not be things that they actually want to do long term. But when they get to college, they can actually choose. Like, okay, I'm a creative student and I am going to go and be a digital design major. Okay, great. So when I go to college and I have anxiety, okay, so I'm going to college, I can then choose who I want to show up as, which may be different from somebody in high school that I was, right? I can also choose who I want to be around. So researching like, okay, what art clubs are here on campus? Do I like film? Are there other creative pursuits that I, is there a lit magazine or something, right, that I can submit pieces for and get connected with those types of communities and those types of people that share my interests? I think sometimes when students are anxious about these new situations, picking activities that bring them joy just on their face can reduce that anxiety to go over the threshold of the club, right? Because it's like, I'm really good at this. I really feel good about it. And I love to do it. Okay, it's not as scary as I thought. And I can make it happen for myself. So I think those are really important pieces.
I think that's terrific advice, right? And something that we may not think about when you're touring a college, like what are you interested in? Are there, you know, clubs that align with that? Or even if it's some sort of sport activity that you don't really want to play like competitively in the sense of being on a structured team, but you just want to show up for a club, but that gives you a way, and you can again start to preview and hopefully reduce that anxiety of, okay, I know they're going to meet on Tuesdays in the lobby. All right, let me start kind of getting out there a little bit.
Anxiety is tricky, right? Like I think that some students, they're just trying to get through their day. That's, that is their social bandwidth is spent at the end of their day because they've gone to three classes. They've gone to the dining hall, which they hate because it's super loud and they don't know where to sit and it's awkward and weird and the food is weird. You know, it could be any of those things.
Yeah.
And by the time they get back to their dorm room, they're just like, I am exhausted emotionally from this day. That is okay. But I think what we can do as parents for sure is to try to push them slowly to incorporate small things, right? So maybe you don't want to eat, you're too nervous to go in the dining hall, but maybe you eat outside, right outside the dining hall by a tree that you like. That's a good first step. And then you make your way in. Or maybe you go into the dining hall to get your food and then you carry it back out, right? So that you're getting there, you're practicing new things and you're pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, which is hard for anybody to do. But I will say, as a student who is anxious about being on college campus, I would bet that if you were to look in all directions, you would see at least 15 students that feel the same exact way that you do. You may not think they feel the same way that you do, but they probably do because it's awkward and it's hard and it's a new experience for everybody.
And I think finding that just right balance is so important and taking those micro steps. And maybe again, kind of in thinking about that transition is having conversations with your student of what are we overwhelmed with? What do we think is going to go well? Of course, best laid plans, you know, may not always be perfect, but then, all right, back to that priority, like what should we focus on first? So mealtimes, obviously that's important. You need to eat. What can that look like? And then build up to showing up for a club. But yeah, you're right. I mean, three classes, I may need a nap and I'm overwhelmed, but how can we then individualize and have these conversations to support our kiddo so that they feel that success in increments that align with what they need?
Absolutely. And, you know, as parents, if you think about it, I mean, we all went through this process, you know, maybe it was many years ago for some of us and not as long for others, but it's not easy to do what they're doing. For some of these students, they've been in the same school for 12 years. Everybody knows them. They know everybody else. Everybody gets them. They have their built-in group. And in a lot of cases, they are starting then from zero. That is hard. It's hard for anybody. And so just giving themselves a little grace, Like, and parents doing that too, right? Like, you know, knowing that your student's not going to immediately walk on campus and have 60 friends, right? It just, that is going to take time, just like it took time in the K-12 system, right? To find your people. It's going to take the same in college.
We've kind of all heard that term of helicopter parenting.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Can kind of get in the way of that independence that comes with the college experience. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for parents in terms of helping them kind of strike that balance between offering support and then fostering independence? And I also want to loop that into anxiety, because if you're having a heightened anxiety mm-hmm. time at a particular moment and you're a parent, you may just want to, you know, helicopter in and evacuate them. So kind of how do we let them, again, that just right, struggle a little bit, sure. but not too much, not overwhelm them. How do we do that?
You know, it is a balance, because like you said earlier, we're so used to as parents just doing it. We've just done it for so long. We don't even know how to not do it anymore. But I think trying to take a step back, allowing the student to step forward and step up. And instead of saying, okay, you're like going into combat. Okay, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to do this. Saying to the student, how can I help? What do you think the first best step would be, right? So just pausing, taking time to allow them to kind of think through it. And again, that's going to help them down the road too with, you know, task initiation and prioritization and all the things, right? It related to executive functioning. It's slower though. That's the thing, right? And I'm a mom too. I like to get things done quickly, very quickly. And it takes time to ask those questions, to help them reflect, to help them think through what to do in the situation. And like the situation you were mentioning for a student who's just having a moment, right, on campus, and they're calling their mom. And they're like, I don't know what to do. What do you think the next best step would be? Who do you think might be able to help you at your dorm? Have you thought about checking out the counseling center, right? Because maybe they have somebody that you could talk to right now, right? Helping to guide them. Because again, you know, we're parents. So we're like, oh my God, it's an emergency. I'm freaking out. My child is freaking out. I'm going to freak out too. And being as calm, measured as you can as a parent will help them as well. Just not doing it for them. I mean, I think that's really the big thing, right? And we have a tendency to do that. But the more we do that, the less empowered the student feels, I think, sometimes, right? And so it's really for them, like even in high school, I mean, this is their opportunity to kind of step up and take ownership over their lives, right? And when they go to college, if we're still doing a lot of those things for them, instead of taking a step back and asking those questions, that can be hard for them to step up to independence sometimes.
Can you share some actionable items or steps that students can kind of think through or put into place either when they get onto campus or thinking ahead and transitioning to campus or just even that first year that can help kind of reduce some of those pressures on where they are and the independence that they're given?
I think the more they can practice in high school, the better off they're going to be. So for example, if you're a student who takes medication, I'm just going to use that because it's a big one, right?
Yeah.
Show up, or, you know, be on time and take your medication. Like those are my two biggies, right? So when I think about medication, I think about, okay, I'm a student and I go to college. How am I going to refill my medication? What about my doctor's appointments? Is my mom still doing those things for me? Can I take ownership of that in high school? Right. And I just do my appointments, and my mom, maybe we have a shared calendar, or I let my mom know that this is what's happening. But I, as a student, am doing that stuff. Then there's less of a burden because they've been doing it. So there's no change when they go to college, right? It's just the same process. They're just in a different location. I think about things like that. I think about like managing your own finances, you know, things like that. You know, those are things that can start at home in K-12. A lot of the life stuff, laundry and cleaning and organization, right? I mean, I have a middle schooler, so I'm in it with that right now, but really helping them. Okay, it's laundry day and it's Sunday and you're going to do your laundry, and helping the students build in an infrastructure for themselves now, so that then when they go to college, they just have it. It's there. okay, I got to go do, it's Sunday. I got to go do my laundry. It's going to be different, right? Maybe it's in my building. Maybe it's in a different building, but this is what I've done. This is my routine, you know, right? Our students' routines are good. Structure is good. Sometimes they don't like it, but they need it. And so how can we help them build that in and carry it over?
Yeah, let's talk about this a little bit, because I think this is really important, that part. And my head is just like swirling. But in terms of like, for the med management, right? Let's start there. I think that's critically important. And coming up with a system so you know, did I take it? Did I didn't take it? So it's not just like your bottle of like, did I take that this morning? Did I not? Like having that system. And then also teaching our students how to know when we need a refill. So yes, some medications do have that automatic refill. They'll ring you, that, you know, the Autobot will say, oh, it's time for you to pick up this med. But if not, or if your refills are out and you go to the pharmacist and you've already missed a couple of days and you're like, oh, I'm out, you know, and they're like, oh, we submitted it. We haven't heard from your doctor. Like how to handle that with guidance of a parent so that when it comes to that time, it becomes seamless. And also with our kiddos, having them practice to use the phone. We're so used to texting, right? I'm going to put we instead of just blaming our beautiful students, but how to actually make a phone call and not like well, I'm calling my friend, but I need to make a doctor's appointment, how to find where that phone number is and have that parent sitting next to the student and then slowly pulling away. And the idea of a shared calendar and getting used to putting those appointments into our calendar. And then if you do see a therapist, right?
Yes.
Is the therapist able to practice their scope of work wherever your student is going to school? Now, if it's in the same state, fine. Great. Are they comfortable with virtual therapy? You know, all of these things thinking ahead. And then the laundry thing, right? So it's so easy when our kids are like, oh, I'm out of laundry. And like it's Sunday, whatever the day is, or however, when you need it, but you as the parent not jumping in and being like, oh, I saw that you were running low on your underwear and I went ahead and washed it and fluffed it and folded it for you. But like kind of those natural consequences, which, you know, if you are a parent, it may not feel great, but it's one of those things where they have to have those consequences in terms of now I don't have anything to wear. My, you know, your emergency, what is that saying? Your emergency isn't my priority or something.
Yes.
I'm sure people in there.
I know what it is, but I can't.
But you know what I'm saying in terms of taking that moment and even like cooking meals or preparing meals, you know, if you're able to go to get meals.
Like the dining hall or something.
The dining hall is the woof. Yes. But then also being, you know, being able to make a quick sandwich or soup or whatever, having that experience. And also the finance part is really key. And I think the younger, the better. And having kids be able to earn their own money, but also delay gratification with that. Being like, oh, I just earned $20. I'm going out. And there goes that $20. But just having that concept and even the concept of saving and maybe having it so you as a parent can see the bank account, maybe not have control of it, or just that they can, or the student can see their savings account, but they can't pull money out of it. I mean, there's obviously different ways, but just also practicing how to use a debit card and what that means, and then establishing credit and all of these independent things.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that going back to kind of the anxiety and the, you know, the food and all those kinds of things, I mean, ordering their own food. Like, I know it sounds so, you know, easy, right? But for some students, it's not easy.
Right.
And so advocating in a dining hall about an allergy that they might have, or ordering DoorDash or something, right? Like students practicing those types of things is a huge self-advocacy piece, but also it's going to help reduce anxiety about doing that in college if they are used to doing that now. My grandparents had me ordering my own food when I was like six. I feel pretty confident. And it was like, you're not getting food unless you order your food. And so, but for some students, that's super strange and they get really worried about that. And so helping them with even scripts of like, this is how you would say this, right? And this is, you know, how you, let's practice, let's role play, right? And practice, you doing this, but all the things you mentioned and so much more. Like, that's the thing. I mean, and I think it can't be overstated. Students are inundated with all of the things that they have to do when they go to college. They're making every decision every day, right? They're not used to doing that. they don't have practice doing it, but they're also, every single thing in their life is changing. So going back to what you were saying about the therapist, I think it's an important point for a student who has a therapist figuring out, is that therapist under like a SciPact agreement where they can see you virtually in a different state, right? Where your college is, because I think there's value in carrying over as many things as you can so that there's consistency for you. So it's not everything is brand new, because there's going to be enough brand new stuff. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. But if you can carry over like your therapist or your psychiatrist, or maybe you've been working with a coach, right? You know, and you want to continue working with it. Great, right? I think those pieces are really important for students to help. Not, you're never going to minimize, but to some degree, right? Like minimize those things that they have to transition to. It's just different than when we were in school, Wendy. I mean, it is.
It is. I mean, I have my application. That good old pencil and paper. So we kind of brushed on academic accommodations.
Yeah.
But in your experience and the support work that you do with our students, what mm-hmm. are some lesser known accommodations or supports that can help students? You know, we talked a lot about this kind of independence, but navigating that life outside of the classroom, whether it's in housing or social, mm-hmm. like what could that look like?
Some of these are not necessarily accommodations, but they're services, supports that might be available for students, which I think are important. Higher ed gets dinged a lot for being siloed, but the good thing about that is there's a ton of different departments, right? And so somebody on this campus is doing that thing, right? You may not know who it is, but there's somebody doing it. So resident advisors, right? In the dorms, right? If you're having a problem with your roommate, if you've lost your key, your card to get in the door, like all these types of things, your resident advisor can be a good resource. And resident advisors also might know what's happening in the dorm to promote social engagement among dorm members. Maybe we're having a sports watch party, or maybe, right, something like that. More and more college campuses are implementing student success departments, and some campuses are implementing like living and learning communities where, you know, there's a specific dorm for, you know, people who are going into journalism, or some campuses will have a specific dorm for students who are neurodiverse, right? And they really are like super excited about that, because it's like, great, everybody's going to get me and I'm going to get them, you know? So looking for those types of things on the college campuses, you know, as you're going through the application process, I think is really neat for students to dig in and find out if what's available, right? Sometimes you have to apply for those things, but that's still, you know, it's a good resource. I also think about, you know, more and more we're seeing some peer mentoring happening on campuses, some coaching, academic coaching happening on campuses. I think those are all two great resources for students to try to research and see, okay, what does this campus have to offer me as a new student? And maybe I'm a student with a disability, or maybe I'm not, right? But what's here for me? You know, accommodations, I think one of the ones that pops up a lot these days are emotional support animals, things like that. And, you know, for some students that it can be really, really critical for them to be successful. And so, you know, we're seeing single room accommodations on the rise as well, right? So those are accommodations that, you know, there's definitely a process to go through that, you know, with the college to see, you know, am I eligible for this? And why not? And in a lot of cases, it has to do with, you know, a medical condition or some type of diagnosis that would indicate that I need this as an accommodation to be successful here at this college. Even places like career counseling. I mean, I know, you know, students are gonna be like, I'm only a freshman, I don't need to know. But career centers and tutoring centers and just all those cool resources that students can dig into, it's just, they're available, you know, they're there for you. Counseling centers, even on campus, you know, some are doing like virtual therapy groups and stuff like that, right? Where that's cool, right? You know, if you're a student coming in and needing something like that, it's there for you. So just, I think the most important thing is for students to do a really good job of like digging in on, okay, there's two sides of it, right? Like, yes, there's an accommodations piece, right? Like, what could I qualify for at this college because of my disability? But then also, what does this college have to offer me as just a student, right? Any old student. And there's a lot, there's a lot more than there, way more than there used to be. So it's a good thing.
Can you talk a little bit about peer mentoring?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that look like, or could that look like, and how would that benefit our students?
So sometimes they will have peer mentoring programs on campuses. They might pair a student with an upperclassman that they can, you know, bounce ideas off of. You know, famously, I guess, sororities and fraternities do have this, you know, a big brother or a big sister, right? Where you pair, you know, and that's kind of like your peer mentor, and they're going to help you through this process, this transition process. You know, sometimes it might be part of that piece might be part of a support program on a campus, right? You know, maybe it's a support program for students with autism, and mentoring is part of that support program, right? Like those are things to really look into too, but it really is about having another student matched with a, you know, incoming student to help them kind of troubleshoot some of the bumps that they're going to hit, because there will be bumps, right? And so if it's an upperclassman who's done it before, who's trained and kind of understands that, then they're going to help that student, be able to help that student get through that. They also know the campus, you know?
And then you mentioned coaching. What could that look like?
You know, it depends on the college. Some colleges have academic coaching programs. And so sometimes it will be you're working with a coach one-on-one. Sometimes they will have workshops that students can attend about time management or study skills or stuff like that, that is part of either, you know, that coaching program or student success program. It's different college to college. But for a student who, again, I go back to has never done this before, right? And needs help with those things, figuring out what could this support look like? Is it through disability support services because of my diagnosis? Or is it something that's offered to all first-year students, for example, right? And you have both. It's both. Sometimes the coaching can be about, hey, let's look at your week. Right? Let's help you look at what do you have this week and forward and, you know, plan. Sometimes it's more about teaching a specific strategy or using a specific tool. It just depends. But there are resources out there. You know, I mean, we work with students in a coaching capacity, although our folks are called specialists for a reason. But we find that students need help to connect the dots of being a new college student. Right? It's not as intuitive as some might think. And again, there's just more stuff that they have to do in any given day. There's more email and pinging that's coming their way, and it can be overwhelming for some students.
I like that term, connect the dots. A couple of things. How does a student narrow a search for themselves when they're thinking about college and thinking about all of these supports, right? So if we're going back to the title of what we're talking about is navigating support systems, how do we kind of start to filter and narrow that search?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, students ideally will be looking for the colleges that serve them in the ways that they want to be served, right? Like, is it cold weather or hot weather? And what do I like best? What's the size look like, right? My big one is like Coke or Pepsi, because Marriott's notoriously Pepsi and I'm a Diet Coke kind of girl. So, but thinking about those kinds of things is, I know it seems trivial, but it's not, right? Because you're wanting to choose the right fit from a college perspective. So you're looking at those types of things. And when you look at support, like it is thinking about what does the disability services office look like? What are they going to offer me? How do I feel about getting my accommodations at this place? I also think that, you know, students now are looking at that, but they also may be looking at a support program that's on campus, you know, and thinking about that. I love to see students picking colleges, not just for their support. I'm going here because they have good support. Okay. But like, do they have your major? Because if they don't, that's not going to work. Right. So thinking through all those pieces is really important. I think from a student perspective, what support have you gotten in high school? What's it going to be like in college? If high school is really high and you're going to a school that doesn't have extra support that you know you might need, okay, what are you going to do to build that support in for yourself, right? And that could be different for everybody, right? But again, if we think about and talk about, we want it to look similar, right? Going from high school to college in some ways, I think it's important to think about and to kind of know what you're getting into. Ask those questions. How often will I meet with my advisor? Oh, great. I have this other person that's a student success specialist. How often do I meet with them? What happens if I miss a meeting? What if I need to meet with them immediately? How available, right? Like those are good questions for students to ask when they're kind of, you know, inquiring about the type of support that's there.
And asking them in advance. So when you're not like, oh my gosh, I need to meet with somebody like 5 minutes ago.
Yes.
What do I do and what number and how do I reach out? But having that all set up.
Yes.
When things are calm and, you know, we're clear-headed and we're not overwhelmed, I would guess would be the best time to do that.
Absolutely. And really go have it be part of your vetting process for what schools you're going to choose, you know, and really getting a sense of that. You know, I think in a lot of cases, moms are driving that message home. But I think for students, it's a really important piece because the goal is not necessarily getting in. The goal is staying in. The goal is succeeding at the college and getting a degree, right? And so if we think about it that way, you know, what do I need to succeed here in this place, in this moment, right? As a college student and helping students kind of think through that. What do they think? Is that different from what parents think? Why? Right?
Yeah.
Sharing those ideas.
So what are some questions that I did not know enough to ask that I should have asked during this conversation?
I mean, I feel like you've asked such great questions. You know, I think you've asked a lot of the questions. I mean, this is a big process, right? It's a big transition for everybody involved. You know, what can parents do? Just take a breath. Everybody take a breath. It's going to be okay. There are over 4,000 colleges in the nation. They're going to get in. It's going to be okay. Right?
That's right.
And the more you can exude, it's going to be fine. We got this. The more that helps with the students to realize, okay, I can breathe here. You know, I know that it's all going to be okay.
I said to my son, and I could just noticeably see him like exhale, was that I was like, as I was driving him, we have three boys and our youngest had, I think, I don't know, like flu or COVID or anyway. So we were all going to go up as, you know, a force family adventure, as I call it. But anyways, so they stayed back. My husband stayed back and I'm driving him up to school. It's about 6 hours from where we live. And I'm like, you know what? Listen, if this is not the place, let's talk about it. There's so many other options, right? But I do want you to get out there. I want you to put yourself out there. He's not a sports guy, so he wasn't going to join any type of or sports oriented, but I was like, go to the ping pong club, go to the engineering club, whatever it may be. And I need you to get yourself out there. But at the end of the day, if this is not it, we will find something that is it. So I think that element for me as a parent, and I've only had one experience and you've had plenty in terms of what you do in your role, was like, I could just see him like, okay, I'm not, because in high school, you're kind of, that's the high school. And I mean, you can change high schools, of course, but like,
yes,
I feel like college is a different realm. And I think he was just like, oh, wait, okay. And he's thriving and loving it. But I think for him and maybe other students, they just need to hear like, this doesn't have to be
right.
Best thing ever, because there's other, like you mentioned, there's 4,000 colleges. We can certainly find, you're going to get into somewhere. And I think that alone reduces a lot of that pressure. And even like that first acceptance, it may not be where you want it to go, but you're like, look, I got in somewhere. So I'm going somewhere, or, you know, then exploring other options, but we're talking about college. So yeah. And just knowing like, okay. And I love your perspective. A lot of this, Amory, of what you're doing is just putting into perspective of you're not the first, you're not the last, whether you have anxiety or learning disabilities or just, you know, trying to figure out who you are as a human and navigating this. And it's so hard because you're 18.
Yes.
And doing this. And so like, you're not the only one, and coming to campus, you're not the only freshman. But there's so many elements. And I think just kind of hitting that pause, like you said, a lot of terrific things of just hitting that and just saying, okay, we got this together.
Yeah, we've got this together. I love parents who let their kid kind of step up and shine and say, what did you think about the schools? Okay, let's talk about it. Well, I liked this and this about this one, but I didn't like the, okay, great. Let's write it down. Let's figure this out. Let me help you, guide you to figure out what's going to be the right thing for you. Cause you're right. Transfers happen. They happen all the time, every year. It's okay.
It's right? Okay. Sometimes and everything's figure outable. Like I'm like, that's what I said. I'm like, everything is figure outable. We can figure it out. You're not stuck.
You're not stuck. Yeah. There. I think that's a big piece because I think that there's such pressure, you know, on students to really know what they want to do. They know what major they know what career they're going to be in for the rest of their lives. That's not smart. I mean, come on, right? Like I've changed careers like 4 times, right? So it's okay to not know. And it's okay to pivot. Like if you get into something, even if you pick a major and you start down that path and you just think, wow, this is not for me. That's okay too, right? And it's okay for parents. And I think some parents, it's like, no, but they're going to do this. And it's like, okay, but what your student's telling you is different than what you are thinking. So you guys might want to chat about it, right? And really hear what your student's saying because nothing, it's all fixable. Like it's all changeable, fixable, you know? There's going to be careers that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
That are happening.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. For sure. So normally I ask this question before we dive in and I was so excited to talk to you, Marie, and I just dove in and we just started talking and here we are. But I love to ask my guest, what is like a hobby or something that you have done that really doesn't relate to what you are doing now?
I love true crime podcasts. And
me
I
too.
Love all true crime. And I'm a series reader, almost rigidly so. I'm just going to say that about myself and just know it. But I love listening to true crime podcasts. I love digging in on mystery series. And so I'll read. I'll get excited. I'm like, yes, $25. I'm in. So that's probably totally different than what I do every day. But I am a total nerd about it. And I get really excited when I have a student that I talk to that's into it. And I'm like, oh, you're into it. Let's talk about it.
My husband's like, oh, are you watching Murder again?
Yeah.
Okay. So what series are we into now?
Well, I love My Favorite Murder. That's my favorite podcast. I mean, hands down, no discussion. It's been around for a long time. 9 years, actually, just now. But the series I'm reading in the old Patricia Cornwell's Kay Scarpetta series, which is she's a medical examiner. Anyway, I love that stuff. I've read series about forensic archaeologists and anthropologists and detectives. And I mean, I could have been, right, a criminologist or in kind of forensics in another life, I think, because I love it so much.
Right. You could have studied the body farm.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Farms, plural, in terms of like how do bodies decompose and what does the light need to do with it?
I know. Kind of fascinating. I know. I could have, should have, right? But no.
All right. Final question. Actually, not quite final, but if you had a billboard with one tip for parents, actually, I'm going to say students because we are talking about college students. If you had a billboard with one tip for our kiddos transitioning to college, what would it be and why?
I mean, do hard things. Do hard things. Do things that make you uncomfortable, right?
And do them scared. Who said that?
Do them scared. That said that. Because again, Jonathan Dalton, bravery does not operate without fear, right? You got to be, if you're afraid and you do it anyway, that's bravery, right? And I think, I mean, I love that. And just, it's so important for students to, it's going to be really weird. You're going to hate it. You're going to be hot. There's bugs. You feel anxious. You know, all the things, but you do it anyway. Right. And when you do that, the feeling you get from doing that is incredible because it's like, wow, I did that hard thing. I did it by myself. I was able to push through. So I would say do hard things. I think it's really important.
Oh, Anne-Marie, this was special and fantastic and such tremendous insight. How can people find you?
I work with Focus Collegiate. They can find me on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. Anne-Marie rocks, you know, but you know, th- That's my little handle. They can email me. My email is annemarie@focuscollegiate.com if they want to reach out. I'm happy to help, like Focus Collegiate related or not. I love this stuff and I love helping students and parents. So
I would say 100,000% that is you through and through. Yes. Thank you so much for being on and sharing all this great insights and guiding our students to success. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You bet. All right. Bye for now. Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.